This is 89.1 WEMU, and welcome to this week's edition of Issues of the Environment. In recent memory, it is this time of year we find ourselves tasked with discussing significant algal blooms in Lake Erie. Unfortunately, we're going to have to do it again this year. The 2019 blooms in Lake Erie are bigger than what we saw last year. In fact, the algae blooms this year are so big, they can be seen from space. Our guest this morning is Don Scavia, and Don is Professor Emeritus of Environment and Sustainability at the University of Michigan. Welcome back to WEMU, Don. We were talking off the air that this is the time of year where we always get together and have this conversation.
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems to be the never-ending story.
Well, it does seem to me that if the algae blooms can be seen from space, it's rather significant. What kind of dimensions are we talking about in 2019?
The forecast for the bloom this year is to approach, if not past, the record size that we've had in the past. The last thing I saw was on the order of 650 square miles at this point.
Should I be frightened by that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The bloom is, of course, unsightly and ugly, and it interferes with all kinds of uses at the beach and boating. What we really need to worry about is if and when it becomes a toxic bloom.
Right. The fact that there is a more significant bloom does not necessarily mean it's more toxic. So do we know what levels of cyanobacteria are contained in portions of this year's bloom?
You know, it's really hard to tell without getting in touch with the people that are doing the sampling. One of the problems is that this bloom species tends to float. So when you get very quiet, quiescent, low wind conditions like we have right now, I believe, everything rises to the surface and you get super high concentrations right at the surface.
It was 2014 when those toxins contaminated the municipal water supply in Toledo, and that, of course, caused the water shutoffs for about 500,000 people in northern Ohio and southern Michigan. This year, from what I've read to this point, the toxin levels are still high for the Maumee Bay area where the water intake for Toledo is located. So could it happen again?
I don't think so, and the reason is because after the 2014 event, the municipalities have put in systems to prepare for it. So they're monitoring it so they know when the toxin starts to increase, and they have in place ways to treat it. So it's not a public health issue from a drinking water standpoint, but of course, dogs drinking it is a problem at the beach. Being at the beach is a problem, but I believe they're pretty well prepared for the drinking water supply.
We're talking Lake Erie algal blooms with University of Michigan Environment and Sustainability Professor Emeritus Don Scavia on 89.1 WEMU's Issues of the Environment. Now, we know that agricultural runoff, particularly phosphorus, is the primary cause for the blooms. Do we have scientific evidence that climate change is exacerbating that problem?
The size and the intensity of the spring rains have certainly already increased over the last decade or two. All the models are projecting that increase is going to continue on into the future. And it's those spring rains that bring the runoff into the lake. So most of the analyses that I'm aware of, most of the models that I'm familiar with are all projecting increased loads from the increased precipitation and climate change on into the future.
Again, projections have climate change continuing to warm the globe and its waters for the immediate future. So it seems to me the more likely avenue of dealing with the issue is continuing to alter agricultural practice and legislative policy and regulation. Have we made progress in the 5 years since that water contamination of 2014?
Well, there have been new programs put in place, new laws and regulations in Ohio, particularly focused on the Maumee watershed. Whether or not and how long it might take to see the impacts of those is a pretty long, drawn-out process. One thing that's really interesting to think about this year, I've heard and I understand that because of the rains this spring, a lot of farmers were not able to plant their crops and therefore were not fertilizing it, yet we had this huge loads of phosphorus. And what's happening is this is then runoff of phosphorus from the soils that are already, the phosphorus that's already in the system. So the message there is whatever we're doing on the land is going to take a long time to actually see impacts in the loads themselves.
How vital is it then to kind of take a more regional approach to this? You mentioned Ohio has passed a lot of new regulations. I know Michigan's been looking at what it needs to do on its part. Other states in the Great Lakes region also looking at how they might mitigate phosphorus runoff into the water system. So how vital is it going to be to have kind of uniform and regional policy to deal with the issue as opposed to state by state and individual regulations?
I think it's essential. I mean, these watersheds, cross boundaries. The Canadian version of the parts of the watersheds are ultimately important, particularly for the dead zone in the Central Basin of Lake Erie. And so, putting the burden on one particular municipality or one particular state is really not the way to do it. It's also not the way the Great Lakes have functioned in the past.
Right.
The states and the organizations have come together and worked regionally. I think that's important to do this time as well.
Is continued and perhaps even increased funding of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative a part of the solution to this particular issue?
To the extent that they direct those funds to this issue, it would be really important. I know that over the years, those funds have been used for lots of different things all across the Great Lakes. But this is pretty urgent right now, and so I think if they continue to focus more of the attention on these watersheds and on this issue of agricultural contribution to the load, it could be very helpful.
I know that when politicians are making decisions that they seek out expert advice and they take all the information they have, they put it together and figure out what kind of policy they can get passed in some sort of bipartisan manner. From a purely scientific standpoint, if you could draw up that policy, do you have something in mind that might get us to where we need to be more quickly?
The interesting thing to me is that we looked at the amount of phosphorus putting down into the Lake Erie watershed in terms of fertilizer. And if you look at what's being placed as fertilizer and compare that to what's going into the lake, only 10% of the fertilizer application actually makes it into the lake, sort of on average over time.
Pretty big impact for 10%.
Right, and what that tells me is that all the agricultural conservation programs that we hope to put in place and more in the future is trying to squeeze down on that last 10%. And so one of the things I've been thinking about is, maybe it's not so much how we're growing what we're growing, but maybe what we're growing. Are there ways to alter and influence the demand for corn, I think, and soybeans? I think if there are ways to shape the market so that there's less demand for corn and soybeans, farmers will grow something different. And maybe that's part of the way going forward.
Issues of the Environment continues on 89.1 WEMU, and Don Scavia is here talking about the 2019 algal blooms in Lake Erie. Let's talk about the blooms and their peak. That happens to be right now. They peak in August and early September. How long does it take for those blooms to dissipate after that?
Well, there's actually two things that drive that dissipation. One is when the lake water starts cooling. This particular species really, really thrives at the very warm temperatures. So as it starts cooling in the fall, it will start growing slower. And then the second thing is they eventually use up all the phosphorus that's available in the water. So those two things will drive dissipation of it into the fall. One of the things that's interesting this year is because of these amazing warm temperatures that we're all experiencing, that temperature factor may last much longer into the fall than we have typically seen. So this particular bloom may last longer than we've seen in the past.
What does NOAA and the rest of the scientific community hope to learn at the end of this year's bloom season that perhaps we didn't know at the end of last year?
The interesting thing in ecology in general is one of the ways that we learn how systems work is by having big perturbations. When you push a system and you see how it responds, you learn a lot more. And I think that's what's happening this year with this massive load and a very unusual temperature conditions. We're seeing something that we haven't seen in the past, and I think we'll learn a lot more just by observing and trying to model this particular year.
Don, I can't thank you enough for the time. Always appreciate the information you pass along and your expertise.
Thank you. I enjoy doing it with you.
That is Don Scavia. He is Professor Emeritus of Environment and Sustainability at the University of Michigan. Issues of the Environment is a weekly feature produced in partnership with the Office of the Washtenaw County Water Resources Commission. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti.